The University of Arizona, internationally recognized leaders in research, discovery, and innovation, is also celebrated for its thought leadership in creating environments that are healthy, sustainable, and responsible. Hi, everyone. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. And we are indeed going to get down to earth, celebrating Tucson Electric Power Company's partners in sustainability. This show is the second of our Brighty Award Spotlight series, and we are indeed really ready to celebrate our in-studio guests and the truly amazing and important work that they represent to our community and to the planet in general. But before I do that, here's a quick tip from Tucson Electric Power, and I love doing these tips because I admit that I learn from them, and I should know all this stuff because I'm Mrs. Green, but they are a valued partner, and here's their tip, and I'm going to go full disclosure, I hadn't a clue. Test your refrigerator and adjust the setting to maintain the correct temperature, 37 to 40 degrees, didn't know that. But how does one do that, you might ask? So to check the refrigerator temperatures, place an appliance thermometer in a glass of water in the center of the refrigerator and then read it after 24 hours. To check the freezer temperature, place a thermometer between frozen packages, read it after 24 hours, and what, pray tell, is that temperature? And this, again, surprised me. It should be between 0 and 5 degrees and not any more than 5 degrees, or it can cause your food to spoil. So I didn't know that. And as I said, truth be told, I hadn't a clue. You can find out more energy tips by visiting TEP.com, and I hope you do. Now I invite you to sit back, remove all distractions from in front of you, and get ready to listen to what our two guests have to share with us. Please join me in welcoming Peter Dorlin, Assistant Vice President, Planning, Design, and Construction, and Chris Kopak, Assistant Vice President, Facilities Management, University of Arizona. Those are long titles because they are big jobs, and it's wonderful to finally have both of you in the room to do big shout-outs about the U of A's commitment to sustainability and sustainable practices. So welcome to Mrs. Green's world.
Thank you very much.
And do I dare mention that I'm a Wildcat alum? I can't do a show with U of A without saying that is a big, important thing to me.
Bear down.
Bear down. Seriously, my little paw print. So just let's start with a few observations about TEP because they have consistently demonstrated the power of partnerships when it comes to energy efficiency. The stories abound about these partnerships, and we've shared many of them stories on these podcasts. In addition to making lots of positive things happen for our community, both in the sustainability and I would call it the community support spaces, like their support of nonprofits, they began recognizing customers with Brighty Awards that are now this year known as the TEP Go Green Awards. Mrs. Green loves that. They started about 5 years ago to promote awareness of their energy efficiency programs, which help customers, big and small, save energy while producing substantial environmental benefits. So the University of Arizona was selected last year for the prestigious Lifetime Achievement Award, and Peter and Chris are here to some of the many reasons for being the recipient of that award, and there are many. Not hyperbole here. So gentlemen, I'm here to say congratulations and let the sharing begin.
Yeah, thank you.
So you both have very different roles. Share with us what you get to do on any given day, Peter, because your responsibility is more in the new development, new buildings, infrastructure, and renovations. And I decided to start with you because I had this clever thought, build it and they will come. So you build it, and then along comes Chris and his team to make sure everything that you set out to do, innovate or renovate, that it all happens. So what do you get to do every day?
Well, thanks, Gina. Thanks for having us on the show, too. We are responsible for planning, design, and construction. That's the name of our department. And so we oversee the physical development of the campus, you know, plan the campus, hire great consultants, hire great contractors. We have architects and engineers on staff. We have inspectors. We have GIS personnel, space management personnel, real estate. So it gives us a real broad sort of view of the campus. And I think that enables us to have a bigger picture about the campus development. And as campus architect, I'm responsible for all of that coming together and making sure that, you know, we have a place that is unique in Tucson, and unique in the Sonoran Desert, and it is the University of Arizona, and that we keep this thread going that's been going for many years. University is close to 130 years old. And I stand on the shoulders of people who came before me, and I hope to lift people that come after me. And so we have the responsibility to keep this campus as beautiful and functional as it can be.
And Peter, we were talking about this before we went on air, about when you were on the show, and we said, oh yeah, maybe 4 years ago. Well, it was 2011. And I want to kind of say, tongue in cheek, baby, look at you now, because you cannot walk for 500 yards on that campus, I feel, without seeing something under construction or being renovated. And it's expanding. The footprint continues to grow. So just from 2011 to now, what a big area of increasing your bandwidth. It's amazing to see what building there is, both from the private sector surrounding the university, as well as the university growth. It's unbelievable. So a lot of people ask me, what is your definition of sustainability? So now I get to ask you, when it comes to planning, designing, and constructing a building, what are some of the things you consider that it meets the criteria for being a sustainable X?
Well, that's a great question. So we, we see the campus as a living, learning laboratory for sustainability. So it's not just, any single point in time or any single building. So when we plan a building, first we look to see if we cannot build it. Because the greenest building you can build
is
the one you don't
build. That's very interesting. Yes, it's so true.
There's a lot of energy and carbon tied up in creating a building. And so if you can construct something, in a renovation rather than construct something as new, you're being greener and you're being more sustainable. If you can repurpose something. So the greenest building is the one you don't build. Then it also holds true that the smaller you can build a building, the more green it is. And it's both in the energy that goes into building it and the energy that goes into maintaining it and operating it. I think one of the really good examples we have on campus is the ENR2 building, the Environment and Natural Resources.
Cross my heart, it was on the tip of my tongue. You go into that building, quote unquote, and you enter another world just before you're even in the building. So do tell about that building, the poster child.
Great. It is our poster child.
Yes.
It embodies a lot of our values, our core values about sustainability. And so the first thing that you won't notice when you're there, but that I know, is that the building was built a third smaller than it should have been, than its program really required. And how did we do that? So if you've been to the building, or if you haven't, I'll describe it a little bit. The building emulates a slot canyon.
It's like walking into a canyon.
Yeah, and it has this big courtyard in the middle that's just open to the air, and there are balconies on every level of the 6-story building, and those balconies are outdoor balconies, and that's the primary circulation of the building, and the courtyard is the primary lobby for the building. So there's no indoor lobby, and there's very little interior circulation. And the way we did that was we tempered the courtyard. So the courtyard has shade, it has thermal mass, it has fans, and it has something
water,
else.
It has vines.
It has plants on every floor.
When you're hot in the summer and you go in there, it's like a 10-degree temperature drop without going inside.
That's true, yes. And one of the big ways we did that too is, I think we sort of pioneered this idea, is that when you bring fresh air into a building, you have to let some air out of the building.
Right,
and
right.
It's already tempered.
Right.
So rather than let it out and vent it through the roof, like is typically done, we actually meter it into the courtyard in strategic locations, and that helps to drop that temperature as well. So that makes that courtyard usable. It makes those balconies usable, much more so than if they were, at ambient temperature. And it allowed us to build a much smaller building, which then Chris has less to pay utilities on and less to maintain, and it costs less to build.
And the lateral light, I have to bring that up. All the rooms, there's light, and that matters. We're going to talk about that later, a sense of space and place. But it's just a building where you want to sit down, and if I was a student, I'd want to do all my homework there. And I'm barely kidding. I'd want to put my computer up. It is like stepping into another world, especially because it's so deep. You just go into it, like you feel like you're walking into a canyon.
You know what's really cool about it, too, is that it's getting better with age. The steel has patinaed. The plants are becoming more mature.
Yes.
Pretty harsh construction.
It's
steel, concrete, and block. I mean, those are average materials used in very creative ways. But the plants are actually what make that space softer and more habitable. And, like we said, transpiration from the plants is keeping the space cooler. So Yeah, I just love that it's getting better with age.
And Trevor Ledbetter, your new Office of Sustainability Director, invited me to a planning session there just so that I could learn more. I think you're going to have a green roof. That's in the making, and how much work that is. When you think just of the physics of the distribution and the all of that it takes for the water flow and all of that, so there's so many considerations.
I'd love to talk about that a little bit. Because this goes to the Living Learning Laboratory. So not only is it a green roof, or will it be a green roof, it's agrivoltaics, which is something also more or less pioneered here at the University of Arizona.
You have to tell us what that is.
And so what it is a symbiotic relationship between generating electricity from photovoltaics, from solar cells, and creating crops or having crops have a higher yield. So this relationship is that the photovoltaics actually shade, on a large scale it would be at a farm, but shade the crops, and the crops therefore, the soil stays wet longer. We have an overlit environment anyway, and so there's plenty of light for the crops to propagate. And the yield on the crops is higher because they're cooler and more in the shade and there's more moisture. And the yield on the photovoltaics is also higher. A lot of people may not realize that photovoltaics, while we have great sunshine here for that, we also have a lot of heat, and they don't work quite as well with a whole lot of heat. So the plant, the transpiration from the plants actually can cool the photovoltaics about 10 degrees. And that 10 degrees makes a big difference in their production. So both the crops benefit and the photovoltaic power generation benefits. And this is going to be a demonstration project on the roof.
And what comes to mind for me, and you know, a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing, so I'm very dangerous. I have a little bit of knowledge about a lot of things, but when you're talking about it, it's like biomimicry.
Exactly.
Because it's biomimicry in action, and that excites me, because talk about cutting edge thought leadership in the biomimicry space. That's how nature works, and you're mimicking nature. So that, I mean, I loved that Trevor invited me and loved what I learned and about all the challenges. I mean, it's just, you just don't put a green roof up. There's a lot of considerations. Okay, so that's kind of like I understand what you mean about what you have to consider in the planning, design, and construction of a building. You touched on some of them. But are there sustainability qualities or considerations that are implemented in the planning and design? I'm not even quite sure what that means. It's like the going a little deeper of what you have to make sure, like construction materials is what I think about. And airflow is another thing. So what are some of the considerations that are not just about putting up walls and windows and airflow?
You know, I think we take a two-pronged approach. So first is really good fundamentals, and second is great technologies. So when we think about fundamentals, you know, we have Old Main on campus, and it's a building that has a big hat on it, like a sombrero, that shades the building. And when we renovated that more recently, the building was actually preserved really well because the roof protected the main walls of the building.
Yes.
But it also shades it. And so if you do fundamental things, like don't put glass on the west side of a building, you know, reduce
especially
the fenestration.
Especially in Tucson.
Right.
Or you're toast.
Right, exactly, literally. And so using good fundamentals is something that we forgot in the 60s and the 70s because we had air conditioning and we just thought, just turn up the thermostat.
Right, right.
Well, if we're gonna reduce the amount of energy we use and the carbon that we create, we need to do things like that. And then, as I said, also great technologies that control the lighting systems, that control the heating, venting, air conditioning systems in the building that absolutely help us to just sip power as opposed to gulp it.
So my next question is, and it's going like, I don't like that expression necessarily, but going down deeper into the weeds, and people know what that means. You're going a little bit deeper. You have been there for quite some time. I want to know what's behind all the efforts. Is it out of a great commitment from the U of A, you know, leadership to have campus development be sustainable? Is it cost driven? Is it what the students want? Where does that motivation come from? Because you have really stepped up the game. And I mean, I know what Chris does. We have meetings that involve 25 minutes talking about Michigan and then 5 minutes about sustainability. So we have to have a lot of them. But seriously, what's the why?
Well, that's a good question. It is a multi-pronged answer. I think first, you know, we just take that response. It's sort of like, you know, sustainability or die, you know. It's like we take this very seriously. We have a responsibility to reverse climate change, and the university has a responsibility not only to live that way, but to teach that way and to research that way. So, and secondly, you know, I like to say one of the other state agencies is the Department of Corrections. The university sometimes competes with other state agencies for money.
Right.
But unlike the Department of Corrections, we have to recruit. We have to recruit students.
Right. They're not being sent to you.
So,
oh my gosh, Peter, did you just say that? That's pretty funny.
Among the top three reasons that a person chooses the U of A, whether it's a student, a faculty, a staff member, is how the campus looks and feels. And obviously, Chris has a big responsibility here. But does it look cared for? Is it beautiful? Has it been assembled beautifully? Is it safe? Is it a place that I'd be proud to be from? Is it sustainable? That's in the top three reasons people pick the U of A.
So for how long? I want to know for how long.
You know, because you've been coming
there a while,
up on the list.
More and more and more.
Yeah, I've been at the university 28 years, and it's, you know, not that long ago, it seems like we were saying 10 in the top 10 list. Now we're saying it's in the top three list.
I love that.
So it is economical for the university. It's a wise financial decision to be sustainable as well. Sustainability means that we're probably using less energy. Sustainability means we're doing a better job of recruiting. So, you know,
it's really a triple bottom line concept.
Exactly.
And I don't think you can overuse that. That really matters because you want it to be people, profit, planet, or somebody in that conversation isn't winning.
And you know, and to that bottom line, we've also determined that we can't build extravagant. No matter what you think of the ENR2 building or other buildings, they're not really extravagant. There's ordinary materials used in creative ways. We can't afford to build extravagant, but we also can't afford to just facilitate. Our buildings, we're going to own them a long time. They need to inspire, right? They need to inspire behavior. They need to provide healthy workspaces. They need to provide a way that people can be more productive. And the ENR2 building, as an example, does just that.
There's so many treasures on that campus, and it's not just because I'm an alum. Kelly, our show producer, and her husband took their kids there last Friday to the Flandrau. It's a treasure.
It's
and
a gem,
it was
yeah.
during, you know, scheduled classes. So, you know, Nolan and Sophia were just starry-eyed about the campus and the activity. And Flandrau is a thing. People come from all over to go there, and we have it right in our own backyard. So, and that's a beautiful building. Really, really beautiful building. Okay, and I am going to tell this story. I am a big serendipitous person, and this day kind of blew me away. I had lunch today with a very dear friend and an MGW partner from the beginning. When I first told my friend, Mike Franks, who is the Siever Franks Architects, about Mrs. Green's World, he just kind of said, I'm in. And he's been a financial supporter and a philosophical and energetic supporter. So we went to lunch today. And he said, I want to talk to you about some podcasts I'd like you to do because I think it's missing from your space. And this is rare for a partner. He had gone through the website. He had a list of all of the categories we have. And he said, but you're not touching on this one. I'm like, tell me, Mike. And he talked about the built environment and how important the quality of our personal and workspaces are in terms of light, air quality, noise, temperature, safety issues, and sustainable environments. So are you doing a big shaking your head? I think it was so weird that he brought all that up because it does matter.
Absolutely matters, yeah. I think, you know, the built environment is also something that, as I mentioned, inspires behavior. So there's a quote that I love from Winston Churchill that says, we shape our buildings and thereafter they shape us.
Love
right?
it.
So it's not just about all these systems and all those things. But when you come into the ENR2 courtyard, think about that the next time you go in there. What you're faced with is, for vertical circulation, is stairs. There's a big grand stair going up the middle of the courtyard, and then there's more functional stairs also on the ends of the courtyard. What you don't see right away is the elevator. So if you're able-bodied, use the stairs. It encourages that. You come in, you go, oh, there's the stair. I'm just going up a couple floors or whatever. And
no, I take the stairs, Peter, because
okay.
I would be shamed as Mrs. Green to be caught in it. One day I was carrying a lot of stuff, and I'm like, where the heck is the darn elevator? That's important too, but that's another message about how important it is. I just read an article about climbing stairs and how good it is for your physical health. So that's another thing. But also, you would agree with Mike.
Yes.
And bad space, dark spaces cause people to be depressed. And if it's too noisy, they can't concentrate. So all of those considerations are things you have to think about. And we were in a restaurant and it was really loud, which most restaurants are. And I have really good hearing. And I said to him, so Mike, like this noisy restaurant, all of a sudden my angst is up a little bit and I don't realize what it's for. It's because I'm shouting over everybody else that's in there. So sense of space really becomes crystal clear when you're in a crowded space or one that the air is not good and you're, you know, kind of laboring. Sometimes I smell chemicals in buildings like in the mall. So thanks for that. So Chris, who's been sitting here as the silent partner, you have lots to share. And so let's get it started because there's no really way to do this other than me, you know, throwing out some of the topics that you and I have discussed. But you have a perspective of from then to now, like 17-year perspective, I think, if that's right, about like you have to care now more than ever, I would think, about what are your utility costs. People who are listening outside of Tucson, come see the U of A. It is a big flipping campus. So here's the man that has to make sure all the wheels on that bus go round and round. So talk about utility square footage.
Well, utility square footage, but even before I get into that topic, I want to say it's a great partnership that the University of Arizona has. It's a baton. And so Pete builds the building. And then our facilities management, we maintain it for, in some cases, 100-plus years. And we have a great team within our facilities department. It's about 640 employees. And that's from operation, maintenance, to our utilities. And we're looking routinely, you talk about built environment, part of that is our utilities and driving down our utility costs. And we've been able to do that from the construction of the buildings and then also taking the older buildings. And in some cases, our buildings are in the 50 to 60-year range, about $2.8 million. There's a huge growth after World War II. And in the next 10 years, we'll have 5 million square feet that are in that 50 to 60-year range. And what a great opportunity when you talk sustainability and driving down costs, driving down water usage, that we can go ahead and update the buildings through deferred maintenance upgrades, but make them more energy efficient, which then as we're partnering at TEP, as you mentioned, TEP has been a great collaborative partner and continues to be. We can go ahead and say, how do we go ahead and take our lighting that is old technology? We go with LEDs. How do we take our air handlers? That's roughly about 55% of our deferred maintenance needs. And we put the proper motors in the air handlers that allow us to go ahead and turn them on and off, variable frequency drives. We're big into data, making sure we can read the data within the buildings. There's stuff called fault detection systems where we can go ahead and put sensors on our buildings. And when we talk Fourth Industrial Revolution, President Robbins, a strategic plan, and how do we integrate that into our buildings and the built environment, it's harnessing that big data. And we have the sensors within the buildings, within the pumps, anything that's drawing energy. And we can then see that on a remote screen. And we can see plus or minus a certain
percent. How much it's using?
Exactly.
Okay. So very, very interesting. In layman's terms, okay, no, but that's like you're talking about the new frontier and technology driven.
And it's here now.
It's here. It's really unbelievable here. So you have this massive campus you have to worry about or be concerned about. I'm sure you worry sometimes about energy use, water use, indoor air quality, what the campus looks like, because Peter said, I got news for you. When we went to look for schools for my daughter, we wanted the campuses to be beautiful. I mean, and in Arizona, we have grass, but even that, you've managed to make it sustainable and haven't had to pull it all out and make it gross concrete in a very hot, it's a heat island. So, okay, do you produce any of your own electricity? You do.
Sure, we do. We have two turbines on campus, cogeneration systems. They're large jet engines, basically. We replace them about every 3 to 4 years after 40,000 hours, and we're able to produce our own electricity, 40% of that, very cost effective. And we're able to harness the heat off those engines as they're running. We can go ahead and harness that. We use about 70% of our heat on the campus buildings
is
through our generation.
And so you capture the heat that those generators are producing?
True sustainability.
Oh my God, I never saw anybody out there capturing it.
There's equipment that
does it. Those little capturing people. But that's massive. Did you say 40%?
70% of what we capture off of our turbines is able to be used, redirected toward the buildings, and saves us financial costs, it saves us operational, and allows us to do other creative stuff. And as you said, with built environment, it's critical as we look at the health, the recruitment, the retention, and the production within the buildings. All the little items come together into one.
So I remember, and I can see his face, and he's an artist as well, that at the School of Architecture, and I'll think of it and then I'll pop out with the name, but I went on a tour a long time ago, maybe when I was on PACES, when they had President's Advisory Council, about the whole using the ice. You know, I don't know if I'm going to articulate it well, but sure. Using the ice storage to reduce peak demand. Do I get it right?
You're spot on. It's called thermal production, thermal energy production. And we have over 200 tanks. So if you think you're a refrigerator that you're producing ice, well, what we do is have these large containers that we're able to produce ice on off hours during the midnight hours. And then in the heat of the summer, when it's 115, 117, we can go ahead and melt down that ice. We're using less electricity during the peak demand times throughout the afternoon and early evening when everybody's drawing a huge amount of electricity from Tucson Electric Power. We can go ahead and melt this ice down, use it through our chillers, and then push it toward our buildings. And so true sustainability, and it keeps coming back through our ice plant.
It keeps producing and producing, and people don't have any idea how hot it gets here. Talk some more about, in any area that you want, about the advances in technology and software and measuring, because that's helping a lot on the global scale, the advances in technology, how you measure, what you're measuring. Talk to me about that. And then there's got to be a cost, because I would put these in the category of upgrades or new purchases. So that's another, you know, whole area of software. What's happening in that space?
I think if we look big picture-wise, we use a baseline of 2012, 2013. And as we're looking at our energy costs, we've been able to drive that down several millions of dollars. And again, it's efficient.
You've got to be kidding me.
No.
We can't gloss over that.
That's
huge. A big deal. So how did you achieve some of those savings?
Well, I'll tell you, it's great partnership with folks throughout the university. From when the buildings are built, there's great communication going on between PD&C and facilities management with the faculty, staff, and students. Routinely within our facility staff, we are looking at our utility operation. And not just utilities, we're looking at the operation maintenance, the grounds as a whole. And computerized software system, more and more, we need to have the ability to harness that big data. But harness it and make real-time decisions at our fingerprints. We have it now within our plants of 22 chillers, 36,000 tons of chilled water that we produce at our peak, that we can see if those machines are working as efficiently as possible. If you go to our control room, it looks like the Star Trek command center with monitors and dashboards and meters. Underground within our 6.5 miles of tunnels, we have 800 meters on our chill water and our steam. So we have real-time data. If something is not working at peak performance, we then can dispatch out our staff and go ahead and make the proper adjustments. I've already mentioned about our fault detection system, and that's the wave of the future that is now. We're now taking the campus as a whole systematically and putting more sensors on to be able to read all our buildings and building equipment. And we plan on doing that throughout. Our computerized irrigation system, that's a software program. In the desert, we want to be extremely efficient with every gallon of water. We use 85% of reclaimed water on all our turf on campus. It's nice to have a main mall. There's a lot of tradition with that main mall.
No kidding. And Mrs. Green wouldn't like to see that go gray.
Well,
seriously.
We don't plan on it. But we are big into water harvesting, but software systems within our water, we have 9 wells on campus that we produce our own water. We're able to read through a SCADA system, a software system, if those wells are producing that are 900 feet down. And, you know, I have a passion. I came out here, I hiked the Grand Canyon, and just fell in love with the Southwest. But there's scarce water, and we have to be careful about that. Coming from Colorado and through Arizona and to California, we want to be extremely efficient with every drop of water. And so using software programs to be able to read our water, not only from our wells, but once it gets in the building through water journals and low-flow toilets and faucets. We're constantly looking at ways to improve our sustainability, whether it's energy, whether it's water usage, whether it's our recycling and trash diversion, and our greenhouse gas emissions, trying to eliminate that. And we have some really really neat projects that are going on that we're looking right now at reducing our entire Scope 2 emission over the next couple of years. And so that's another exciting project also.
And, you know, I get intel on President Robbins. Of course I do. I'm out there in that space in many arenas, and it's just so positive. I know he was at the Second Nature Conference last week and chaired a panel, and that quite a few U of A representatives were there. And, of course, not that I'm competitive with that university up the street there, but it matters to me to be in that right kind of competition, because you're competing for the right things, the good things. And Michael Crow is definitely a leader in sustainability. But what goes on at the university that I see with what I do every day and interviewing national and international people, the U of A are really, you're a big deal. It's a big deal. And let's just talk for a minute about the whole the grass thing. What I didn't know 10 years ago is how you fertilize the grass will dictate its water use. Who knew? Not the average citizen, trust me. And you have totally come on board with organic fertilizers, that it takes minimal water use, and like you said, the reclaimed water. Because I don't think anybody really does want that green mall to go away. There's a lot of, not just tradition, but it's a cooling element, and it just makes the U of A better.
I think you mentioned, too, when you have those oases in the desert. And I have two kids here, soon to be three, at the U of A. And when they're stressing out during finals, or they need that cool spot on campus, whether it's the older side of campus west of Old Main or up on the lips in front of administration building, it gives them the opportunity to go out there, maybe kick off their shoes, play some frisbee.
It really matters.
And relax.
Right. It's that sense of space.
Yes, indeed.
That we're talking about. Seriously. What about, let's talk a little bit about solar, like just zero in on that, because since I've been doing this work, everywhere I look that I think you can, you're putting solar. They're on the parking lots. There are parking lots that were already in existence that are going there. It's on roofs. How big of a push has that been for you in terms of reducing overall energy costs? That's just costs.
Well, it's a great team effort throughout the university as a whole. And it's the business affairs. It's working with our president's office, working with plan design construction, our facilities department. Of saying, how do we go ahead and harness the use of solar power as it becomes more cost-effective? And how do we bring that onto campus? How do we possibly have solar that is off campus and we could go ahead and bring that in as a renewable and then take advantage of that? And as I said, with our Scope 2 emission, and that's a mission that we're buying electricity from Tucson Power, are we able to put some plans in place in terms of renewable power, solar power, maybe wind power, that we could go ahead and drive that greenhouse gas emission down? And I know it's President Robbins' desire to do that, and there's not many universities who are doing that. And so, yes, ASU is doing great strides there, but the U of A is doing just outstanding strides also in our sustainability efforts on many different fronts. That, you know, a lot of times we just need to get out there and market a little more, because there's some really creative items that are taking place.
That is it. Because I went to the Global Climate Action Summit, and I was with a lot of people, with Jim Beiser and Kathy Jacobs and Diana Liverman, and we're sitting there saying, yeah, we do that. Yeah, we do that. Yeah, we do that. And these are, you know, multi-billion dollar companies that the U of A is already doing that. Exactly. And you feel, you know, you get puffed up and proud. But how to package that, you know, that's been one of my passions since I started Mrs. Green's World, because it's really going on there. And the intellectual capital that is at the University of Arizona in terms of the quality of the professors and the research and the Howery program and the Carson Scholars. I mean, the list goes on. Okay, this is not a stump the guest question, okay? Because another thing, when you talk about sense of space, I'm like kind of a fanatic about indoor air quality, because someone really educated me, who I cared very dearly about. And toxins in the home matter. We actually bring toxins home with our cleaning products that can make us sick, that can hurt our kids and our pets. What are you doing about green cleaning products, Chris?
Well, I'll tell you that we've been doing green cleaning for over a decade.
So I couldn't stump the guests.
So good try. But, you know, we believe in a healthy environment. Matter of fact, our custodial staff of 200-plus strong, routinely we talk about cleaning for health, cleaning for the health of the buildings, folks who are...
For the health of it.
Exactly. For the health. And so our staff understand we want folks from our faculty, staff, and students, when they come in, we don't want them smelling items that may cause irritants. And so our cleaning products are all environmentally friendly. We go ahead and review those. Routinely, we're looking at our cleaning procedures and making sure our buildings are clean for health. And they do a great job doing that.
So I have more. We just have to go more because I have to ask you about this. I'm so impressed.
You're going to try to stump us again, I see.
No, because this is, and you, I'm like this weird lady at the basketball games and the public events, and some of the compost cats would agree that who's that lady and why doesn't she just be quiet? But there's a lot of student sustainability engagement. And let me just explain that. I do not want to be that person that's sorting trash at big events. And they do. And they are friendly. I was at Savor at the Botanical Gardens. All of these kids had their U of A shirts, compost cats, students for sustainability. It is not a fun job. And they were sorting and putting things in the right bins to commit to that. So how would you rate? And Peter, you can weigh in on this too, because you have a view. I want to start calling you Pete, though, because Chris does. So we have to have that conversation after we get off air. But what is the level of student engagement, and how encouraging or discouraged are you by that?
I'm very excited. We've seen the commitment and the level of involvement from our students just multiply 10 times over the last several years.
That's amazing. Like, I want to ring the bell. That's a big...
We should have a big horn in here.
I can do it. I can do that. I do it once in a while. That's a big deal, 10 times. You can see it.
Well, our diversion, our students working and partnering with our facility staff, Jill Burris, who's in charge of our recycling and waste, from our tailgating to our zero waste inside the football games, to the amount of material that we're recycling on campus, special events, Tucson Festival Books coming up, Spring Fling.
Thousands and thousands and thousands of people. Oh. Like at the Tucson Festival Books, it's crazy.
150,000
people
will be there
in 2 days.
Exactly.
And you have waste to contend with, and all the toilets have to flush, and the beat goes on, and it's like, yeah, it's a big deal. So Pete, see, I love it now. Pete, what do you see in terms of student engagement? You're on the campus, you're connected, you've been there 28 years.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of, as Chris said, student engagement. You know, so we're looking to engage them in ways that gives them experience. That when they leave the university, they have some hands-on experience. And so some of the ways that, that ties back to sustainability, you know, we have a community garden. Chris and I both sat on a panel to help with the university providing a space for this community garden and resources. And I know Chris's folks
actually helped
to facilitate their construction
right.
of that.
Right.
And so, you know, there's we have student engagement. We're building houses on campus right now, on the fringe of campus, over near our parking structure to help buffer the parking structure to the neighborhood. And that is a student engagement project through the College of Architecture. And the students actually designed the houses, and they're constructing the houses with some help, both from facilities management and some subcontractors. So those kind, and they're making these houses very sustainable, you know, so they're learning and they're practicing at the same time. They're not just learning, they're practicing. And that's what really helps it sink in.
And it's really great because then it's like, it's to me, it's organic. That's what I want to say. It's really organic. It's not a policy or President Robin says, or Chris is going to put this mandate out. So one of my pet projects, I'll never forget it. I will never forget it when John Isley and Mike Peel called me, I don't know, I'm sure it was at least 3 years ago, but in that whole memory thing, it could have been two, it could have been four. And they say, we want you to meet this guy named Peter Dobrovolny, which took me a while to, that's mm-hmm. not Peter Dorland, Peter Dobrovolny. And we want you to hear about the 2030 district. And he had me literally from hello after I learned how to pronounce his name. But it's a big deal for Tucson. And we just got from emerging 2030 district to 2030 district. We're officially a district in the country that has criteria for energy and water use. So, Chris, do you want to weigh in on that? You guys are in. And I know Trevor's excited. We're excited. It's a big deal.
Well, it's a true collaborative effort with many departments at the University of Arizona and then also City of Tucson, Pima County. And so within that district.
Partnership. It's
collaboration.
Yes.
And that's how you have to do stuff if you want to be successful. And the fact is, I believe there were one of 11 cities now who are doing that. I believe it started up in Seattle. So we're real excited to be
able to. It's nice to be in the top of some of those numbers.
Oh, it is.
It really is, because we're not true leaders in education in terms of funding. But let's not ruin this really positive conversation. So the U of A joining the 2030 district is huge.
It is. You know, over
huge.
Reducing our overall energy usage, water usage, by 50% by 2030. And as you've heard already, we're reducing our square footage cost for utilities now is lower than it was 17 years ago. And that's because of the way the buildings have been built, the way the buildings are maintained, and we're addressing the older items in the buildings. And then as we partner with others within the city of Tucson, it's best practices. Can we share what's taking place at the University of Arizona, some really great stuff on sustainability, and can we share it with others within the city of Tucson and Pima? And they're sharing their great practices,
the country,
too.
The country.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a ripple effect. So this half-hour show has turned into an hour show, and I knew that was going to happen because I have the both of you here, and I don't know about you, but time is flying for me. So overall, what is your, like, I don't even think I have to ask this question. It's kind of like redundant. It's so clear that behind all of this is a true, thoughtful, intentional commitment to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Everything you talked about, there's a component of that intention and that consciousness, which is the big bad wolf. I mean, that's the big bad wolf. So I'm proud to be part of this university and love to represent all of the things you're doing and be a spokesperson for that. Did I miss anything big that you're just dying to share? Because we covered a lot. I loved it.
Well, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's really a holistic approach, and it's been an organic process. It's taken a while, but we absolutely have some great leadership at the university
now
that are behind this. Dr.
Robbins, yes.
Yes, and you know, he's behind what Chris alluded to earlier, is a large-scale renewable energy project to try to offset all of our Scope 2. No other university of our size has ever done that.
I can't
and
wait.
We are situated to be the first. We're not quite there yet, but we're all working on it really hard. Chris, myself, Trevor, there's a core team that's working on that. And it's because Dr. Robbins has said, let's do this.
Pace of the leader, pace of the team.
Right,
and
right.
You guys are both leaders. Yeah. In your, and I was not going to say boys, believe me, I was going to say both, and both leaders in your areas, and it shows, and now it's coming together. So pace of the leader, pace of the team. Okay, anything you're dying to say?
Well, I guess,
Chris?
What I'd say in wrapping up, you know, it's a vision, and it's visionary.
It is a vision.
And it starts with a great president, with President Robbins, and the collaborative effort of many throughout the entire university. Students are totally engaged, and it's exciting because we're here for a short period of time. But we're leaving our footprint, and we're going to leave our footprint in an extremely positive manner with a number of sustainable projects that are taking place that are very, very exciting to be part of. And so we look forward to doing more. We look forward to coming back again.
I'm telling
and
you,
sharing
this
the results
is,
of what's
you know
taking
me.
Place at the University
I've
of Arizona.
I've talked to you, Chris, about wanting to be one of the people that tells the stories, because there are many stories. So I love it that it's Mrs. Greenfield Cho and I get the last word. So here's my last word. As a mission-based organization, we are committed to raising awareness about every aspect of climate change imaginable. This is yet another strong, solid, very clear example of our show guests that helps to remind us that there really is a great deal of good news out there, working on important issues being addressed by cutting-edge universities like the University of Arizona. And I want to say the cutting-edge university, because I'm so proud of that. They have a big and ever-expanding campus and, in turn, carbon footprint. But they are very committed at every level of their institution to minimize and reduce theirs and to continue to be true leaders in sustainability. And guess what, folks? We need them. We need them to continue to do just what they are doing to help us address the reality of climate change, to preserve our natural resources, and to show up as a university that is committed to the health and well-being of their students, their faculty, their community, and the planet. And indeed, they are doing just that. And A final special thanks to Tucson Electric Power for being such intentional and supportive partners of so many good things going on in our community. And I could share many stories. They're doing a lot of things that don't make the news in schools about school safety. I mean, the list goes on and on. And the Brighty Awards, now known as the Go Green Awards, are only one example of that commitment. So you guys, thank you. I mean, thank you. My enthusiasm, I hope, is very apparent. I want to talk about our next shows. Our Mrs. Greenwell show is Zen Honeycutt, the founding executive director, Moms Across America. I mean, they're kicking it. Health, freedom, and the future of America. The moms are taking it on. And then our Down to Earth show is going to be fabulous. It's a woman named MacGyver Tank, and she's the chief property and operations manager for Girl Scouts of Southern Arizona. It's show 3 in our special series celebrating the Brighty Award winners. So thank you both for showing up here and for showing up on the planet to just implement your big missions. Thanks.
Thanks for the opportunity.